offering our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's segment of Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind, talking to all of you from our studios at Prashanti Nilayam. Sai Ram Arvind, and on behalf of all of you, let us offer our humble pranams at Swami's lotus feet. And just as this bhajan is going on in the background, it's just an indication that we are here to discuss the Ramakatha Rasavahini, the story of Lord Rama as written by our Lord. And we are at that part where the prince are traveling with Vishwamitra. But before we come to that, let me also invite Arvind to join the satsang. Sai Ram Arvind.
Sai Ram Prem. And yes, as always, it is such a beautiful joy to be discussing the story of Rama in the omnipresence of Sai Rama and the omnipresence of dear Bhakt and Lord Hanuman. And it is such a beautiful coincidence that without telling, Brother Raghu has selected a bhajan. We often begin with a bhajan of Rama at the beginning of our satsang, and it was so beautiful that it matched. And since we have already started a little late, so I think it is perfectly in accordance to the divine plan. So dear listeners, where we had reached was the shores of the river Sarayu. Just as Vishwamitra is taking the two brothers, Rama and Lakshmana, on what will possibly be the beginning of the divine mission, they enter through the forests that abound on either side of the river Sarayu. And that is when sage Vishwamitra falls into the trap of Maya, as Swami narrates this episode. It actually happens on the banks of river Sarayu, but its beginnings happen sometime before itself, when they enter the forests. And sage Vishwamitra tells the two brothers, now this is the dangerous part. This is a part that is infested with ogres, demons and wild animals. So it is time that you put on your armor and hold your bows and keep an arrow, you know, loaded onto the bow. Be ready. This is the time for alertness. This is when he starts advising Rama and Lakshmana on how alert and ready they should be in the face of any possible danger. And then nothing happens, nothing even uneventful or eventful happens through this journey, and they land up on the banks of river Sarayu.
Right, and this is the point where Swami often talks about how the power of Maya is so strong that even those who have recognized the divinity, because you know, the entry of Vishwamitra into the story, in the story, happens when Vishwamitra comes to the court of Dasharatha and tries to tell him that your sons are not ordinary beings and you don't have to fear sending them with me. And that's when he explains that, you know, they have come for this task, and they are people who cannot be deterred from their mission, and these are very two little scares for their, you know, to put them away. And that same Vishwamitra, as you said, is now going to embark into a journey of tutoring these two, considering them as little insecure boys.
I think, Prem, we have actually gone a little ahead. Our listeners who might not have read or heard the Ramayana would be wondering what happened. Why are these two who were till last week singing glories and praises of sage Vishwamitra now calling him as a person who has fallen in delusion or Maya? Well, what happens is, as they reach the banks of river Sarayu, sage Vishwamitra tells the two princes that they should have their ablutions, they should have a wash, they should have a bath in the holy river. And then he says that, you know, what you are up to against is something very, very difficult, something very challenging. And therefore, I will instruct you into two mantras. Mantras are hymns or chants which have great potency. He tells them that I will teach you these two mantras, namely Bala and Atibala. And these two mantras will ensure that you don't feel hunger, you don't feel exhaustion, you're ever fresh, you're ever renewed, you're always full and bubbling with energy. And this will ensure that your mission is a success, that you will not face any kind of problems because of these. Now this is something very, very strange, because it was Vishwamitra who reminded Dasharatha of who his children are. He tells, O king, do not get deluded with attachment. Do not forget that these are not ordinary children. They are in the Lord incarnate itself. I mean, Rama is the Lord incarnate himself. And he has come on a divine mission, and it is sage Vasishtha who comes in, and he also says that you are only stopping them from the unfolding, you are stopping the unfolding of a magnificent mission. So don't do this. And a person who has thus advised King Dasharatha, now himself is thinking that he should equip the two princes so they can battle the demons and ogres better.
And in the run of the story, I think the only person who is absolutely consistent with his stand must be Lord Rama. You know, he's all through pretending that he's just an ordinary mortal, and he's even in the beginning, you know, if you look at Valmiki Ramayana, there are so many dialogues between Vasishtha and Rama, where Rama would often tell that, you know, I don't know, Guru, what you're saying, but I am just, you know, Prince Rama, the son of Dasharatha, of the king of Ayodhya.
You know, this way the Lord behaves, we find it so thrilling and beautiful, because we can relate it with our Swami too. You know, whenever Swami would speak, he would ask as if he doesn't know. When a drama is being planned, I remember during one of the dramas that we were planning, it was for the 15th of August, the Indian Independence Day, the day of Indian Independence, and we had planned an elaborate story, and the whole story has its ups and downs. I will not go into those details here, but basically what happened was, a point in time came just one day before the drama when we had to narrate this story to Swami in order to get his approval. What had happened was, the warden had been called into the interview room, and he had sought Swami's permission. He said, Swami, tomorrow will be a drama by the boys. This was something historic, because it was the first ever time that a patriotic event was being made into a drama in Swami's presence. After that, there have been many dramas, but I think that was the year 2004, the 15th of August. So that was the first time, and therefore Swami's permission was being sought. And then Swami said, what is the storyline? Now, the warden did not have a clear picture of the storyline, so and that is why two of us got a chance to go into the interview room under the pretext of telling the story to Swami. And as soon as we entered, you know, Swami just looked at us, smiled. He looked towards me, and his face became stern and said, you want to run away to America, leaving Indian shores? You want to ditch your motherland and run away to America? So I quickly went on to the defensive, and I said, Swami, it's not me, Swami, it's a grandson. It's a grandson who wants to do that. But Swami, you don't worry, because... Swami said, yes, because... And he cut my sentence short, and he continued. He's saying, because a friend will come, father's friend, and he will convince. And then, yes, there is Bhagat Singh in the beginning. Then there is the father's friend and the father himself. And Swami started telling one by one the details. In fact, he even asked, why have you not included Lal Bal Pal? That is, Lala Lajpat Rai, Bipin Chandra Pal and Bal Gangadhar Tilak. So many things in such short time. You know, both of us were stunned. We were under the impression that we were going to narrate to Swami the details of the drama. And here was Swami who was narrating the details of the drama. But you know, the next moment Swami said, but tell me, why does this happen? And he asked some kind of a doubt, and both of us immediately went on our knees, went to Swami and said, see Swami, what is it? And you know, as I said, that's a total different story altogether. But the gist of it is that we started explaining to Swami intricacies in the story, forgetting that just a moment before he had revealed all the highlights. Okay. So, you know, this is what I feel is the beauty of Maya. The beauty of Maya is, it gives us a chance to interact with the Lord at a human level. Otherwise, there's no need to talk to Swami, you know. What is there that he doesn't know? If it was information seeking that Swami would do through, I mean, if information seeking was the reason for which Swami would speak to us, then there would be no chance at all to speak. But it is in order to give us joy that he would put on this vesture of Maya, so that we get a chance of interacting with him, so that we feel kinship with him, and then we get inspired by him to rise to our true identity.
And even as you're saying, there's an innumerable number of incidents where Swami has, you know, put that phase of a one who doesn't know, or who is kind of completely conceals his omniscience, and then for a moment just, you know, flashes that divinity. I'm reminded of one of my seniors, one of our seniors, the very famous incident, I think he narrated it even in front of Swami. You know, when he was in school, before he became a student of Swami, his parents wanted to take him to, you know, meet one of the Shankaracharyas who were visiting the town he was living in, the city he was living in. And that was the time when he had just started accepting Swami as the incarnation of the divine.
The Shankaracharya of...
I'm not sure. I think it is the Shankaracharya of Kanchi.
Okay.
I'm not too sure though. So he was, you know, in that typical confusion which most devotees go through. He said, here is Swami, here is the avatar of the age. Why aren't these people guiding the people who come to them to Swami?
Correct.
You know, why are they receiving the worship and the, you know, adoration of these people when Swami himself is here and all that they have to do is direct the people to him? You know, this was what was troubling him. And he said, I don't want to go to any Shankaracharya. I don't want to go to any holy man. When I believe in Swami, why should I go to anybody else? So his parents were very, you know, firm that they wanted to take him along. They said, he's a holy man. You should give him the respect. So let's go. So he had to go, but this dilemma was in his mind and this, you know, this fight was happening in his head. So he goes to that place where he was giving darshan. And he was coming, walking along that aisle where he and his father were standing. And also this question was going on, you know, why do these people do like this? Why don't they, you know, direct people to Swami? And this Shankaracharya, you know, believe it or not, he comes straight to that point where this boy is standing, takes a quick right turn, comes to him, and they had offered some garlands on him and they had made a crown made of flowers.
Okay.
You know, which is traditionally done in some of the places where they welcome these holy men. So there was this crown of flowers and this garland. He just comes up to this boy, he takes the crown, puts it on his head, removes the garland and puts it around this boy's neck and walks away. Almost to just acknowledge that thought which was running in his mind.
Wow.
He was so surprised by this, and this happened much before he was a student. And many years later, when he was in Swami's presence, you know, when you are in Swami's presence, let's say there's nobody in that interview room, only you are there, you want something to talk to Swami about, you know, because Swami is saying, ah, chippu, chippu, what else, what else? So you're looking for some things to tell Swami so that you have a conversation running.
Correct.
So he was, you know, thinking, and then he thought of this incident. So he thought, he said, Swami, once I went and met the Shankaracharya and this happened. And then Swami said, oh really, what happened? And this boy started narrating that whole incident and with graphically describing what was happening in his head. And Swami was saying, oh, Alaga, you thought like that. Oh, you told your father like that. Oh, your father said like this. Oh, then you went and you know that wherever those responses from the listener were required, everything was in place. And so that enthused him and he was going with that narration in, you know, full gusto.
Okay.
And it came to the point where that Shankaracharya was walking and coming down the aisle. And when he was about to tell that punch incident, Swami just stopped him. And then Swami said, and then he came to you, he removed the crown, put it on your head, removed the garland and put it around your neck and walked away. Until then, this boy who was telling this whole story to Swami, thinking that he's narrating a, you know, something like a
thriller,
suspense thriller to Swami, and Swami was giving all those reactions which were required, suddenly stops him and completes that story. You know, you're very fortunate if Swami does that. You know,
how many times have we seen this, Prem, happening? You know, a drama will be going on and Swami has seen the rehearsals of the drama 10 times and yet when he's watching it for the 11th time, when the suspense scene comes, he is in as much suspense and he almost appears tense, wanting to know what's going to happen next. What he does when watching this drama, he does in the drama of life too, which he has directed. And this is where, you know, I feel that we can derive a beautiful definition for Maya based on what Swami has said. You know, Swami says that God knows everything, but he behaves as if he knows nothing. Man knows nothing, but he behaves as if he knows everything. And, you know, in my humble opinion, I feel this is Maya. Maya is that which makes man who knows nothing behave as if he knows everything. And Maya is that which makes God who knows everything behave as if he knows nothing. The only difference is that in the case of man, Maya is in control of man. But in the case of God, God is in control of Maya. Because Maya deludes man, because he is deluded, man behaves as if he knows everything and he is when he knows nothing. But because God wants to feel kinship with man and pull him out of Maya, make him realize his true identity, God purposely puts on Maya and behaves as if he knows nothing when he knows everything. So I just felt that this statement from Swami, where he says man knows nothing but behaves as if he knows everything, and it's vice versa with God, that could stand as a beautiful definition for Maya itself, because it is Maya that makes both behave in that manner.
Definitely. Once I was talking to one of the old students, and he shared with us a very interesting thing about Maya which Swami had told them. You know, we often talk of Maya as something which we have to battle, right?
Yeah,
something which we have
force.
To conquer, and something which we have to vanquish. When Swami was speaking to them, I think a group of students, Swami said, see, Maya is the other side of God. He said, like the darkness which comes as the flip side of light. He said, it is not evil or it is not bad. He said, it is as much aspect of divinity as divinity itself is. So he said, don't fight with Maya. Accept it and surrender to it, and you'll come to God. And you know, this student had taken it up so seriously, even those bhajans where it comes, you know, Maya Vinasha or
Maya Vinashaka Moshika Vahana.
He wouldn't say that Vinashka. He said, because Swami said it's not to destroy Maya. Maya is not to be destroyed, but Maya is to be accepted as one of the aspects of divinity.
Though I am jumping a little ahead here, I thought it would be apt to bring it in, because Swami has given a beautiful comparison from the Ramayana. He says that Rama is the Lord. I mean, you know, so many similes and metaphors.
Right.
We had spoken one where Rama is Atma Rama and Sita is wisdom.
Right.
But in another analogy, Swami says Rama is the Supreme Lord and Sita is Maya.
Right.
And behind is Lakshmana. And in the forest, when they would walk, it would always be like that, Rama at the head, and Sita behind him, Mother Sita behind him, and Lakshmana forming the back of the three-member convoy. And this is how they would walk through the forest. So, Swami says that Lakshmana need not battle Mother Sita. He just has to bow down and say, Mother, can I have the darshan of the Lord? Then Mother Sita would move and he could see Rama. So, as you said, Swami says you need not battle Maya. You need not fight Maya. You even can use love. I mean, not even can. You should use love. It will be much easier. For Maya also, since it's an aspect of God, will shower the same compassion and make way for wisdom, so that you will be able to see the Lord in all His majesty and brilliance.
In the Bhagavad Purana, it said, you know, Mother Yashoda has that vision of seeing the whole cosmos in the mouth of
Lord
the
Krishna.
Little child Krishna.
Baby Krishna.
You know, that's the most phenomenal experience a devotee can have. And you cannot go beyond that. You know, you cannot doubt the divinity of an avatar beyond that. But, you know, once that vision is given to her, it seems Krishna immediately withdraws it. You know, immediately he takes that vision away, because he says, I have come here to give you the joy of treating me as a child. He said, if I don't give you this Maya, you will not enjoy this. He said, I don't want you to see me as a, you know, divine entity and worship me. I want you to relate to me as a child and treat me, behave with me like you are my mother. And you know, that's exactly why, because yeah, I remember coming across this in one of the discourses where, as you said, Mother Sita stands for the Maya aspect. And when you say Maya, it's just that duality. You know,
exactly.
When you say divinity, it is that oneness.
And that is what I thought when you were saying that darkness is not bad. The minute there is light, there has to be darkness,
right?
Because light doesn't have meaning without darkness.
Exactly.
So this is just duality and nothing more than that. It's like saying this is positive current, this is negative current, and positive negative have to come together for the current to flow. It doesn't mean that positive is something good and negative is something bad.
Right. And that when you say duality, it is nothing but the presence of diversity, which is nature. You know, there is God and God is nature, but that presence of nature and the diversity which you see is nothing but Maya. And that is why, in fact, in that discourse Swami was saying, why Swami says you have to go from, you know, Samashti to Parameshti, where you have to honor nature, you have to give the due respect which is meant for nature, and that is when you can transcend it and go to the Purusha.
In fact, in the Ramkatha Rasavahini, Swami categorically states that Maya will bind you irrespective of your spiritual attainments, your skills, your talent, your abilities, nothing. It doesn't discriminate. It comes equally to everyone. The only way you can overcome Maya, Swami says in the Ramkatha Rasavahini, is when you give up body attachment. When you stop identifying yourself with this body-mind apparatus that you think is you, and you are able to, as you say, grow from Vyashti, individual, to Samashti, that is society, grow further into Srishti, that is nature, finally into Parameshti, where you realize that everything is nothing but a reflection of the same thing, so there's nothing like you, me, it's all one. That state of Advaita, only when you reach, when you are in that Advaitic state, will Maya not affect you. Otherwise, it affects everybody. And Swami says, see, even a sage like Vishwamitra was affected by Maya in spite of his grand spiritual achievements. So Maya spares nobody. The only way to overcome Maya is through giving up body attachment.
Exactly. In fact, we've mentioned this many times before, but I think whenever we talk of Maya, this analogy should find its place. Mm-hmm. Because it's so beautiful. The one which Swami says about God being the master of a house and Maya being the dog that guards the gates of that house. Swami would say, if you want to enter the house, this dog is there stopping you. There are three ways in which you can enter that house. You befriend the dog and then you enter.
Mm-hmm.
Or you appear like the owner of the house to the dog and you enter. Or you call out to the owner. The owner will come with you and walk you into the house. Then the dog will not do anything. And that's why Swami says, when you befriend, you know, the dog, it means you serve the society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you make harmony with nature around you. Mm-hmm. That is one means. And the other is you become like the owner, which Swami says is sarupyam.
Mm-hmm.
And which is nothing but Swami says, love is my form. So you become that form. And the final one is you call out to the Lord. And that's the path of bhakti, right? You plead to Him to come and accompany you.
Exactly. And, you know, this shows the three things, bhakti, karma and jnana.
Right.
Where when you befriend the dog, it is karma. You're actually working to, you know, you play with the dog, you feed it some tidbits. That is what you said. You know, you serve the society because duality is Maya. The society is Maya. The creation is Maya. Anything. Nature is Maya. So when you are in harmony with nature, that is using the path of action. Then when you become the master, you know, you take on the form of the master, that is jnana. You realize your unity with the master. That is the other way. Third is, as you said, bhakti, where you call out to the master comes down and he says, hey, you know, Brownie or Tommy or whoever, just be quiet. And the dog doesn't bark anymore and you can walk with the master. So, beautiful. Three ways to overcome Maya.
Even as we're talking of Maya, I think I'll just sneak in one more little sweet incident which I heard.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll proceed after that. And we hope Hanuman will spare us.
Yeah, I think so. I think we have already done that disclaimer that
right.
Ramkatha Rasavahini often transforms into Sai Katha Rasavahini. And I'm sure Hanuman... Lord Hanuman will forgive us and he won't know the difference actually between Sai and Rama.
Right. This is narrated by one of our very elderly former students, Mr. Pandya. He's from Canada.
Hmm.
He's currently residing in Canada. And when he was a student here once, he often had this doubt. Here is Swami, he's divine. And
this is Mr. Nimish Pandya or Mayur Pandya?
His brother Mayur Pandya.
Okay. Huh.
Okay, so he used to wonder, you know, here is God, and you say that God is Nada Brahmam. You know, every sound and all music and all languages have their origin in Him.
Mm.
And he said, why is Swami speaking English so badly?
Okay.
You know, why is Swami's English so accented?
Hmm. Because heavily South Indian accent.
Heavily South Indian accent, and then you would always find that a few prepositions being left out here and there, and we've always heard Swami speak like that. And he said, why is Swami not speaking flawless English?
Mm.
When he's speaking flawless Sanskrit, when he's speaking
flawless Telugu.
Telugu, he should be able to speak every language on earth flawlessly. And why is he speaking English so badly? So this was a doubt which always troubled him. And you know, one day he said, Swami came to the portico and called for the car and got in, and Swami called an American devotee, you know, to go out for a drive. And he was fortunate enough to join that drive.
Hislop?
I'm not sure who the devotee was. Maybe it might have been because it was around.
I'm reminded of a similar incident where Swami... Okay, continue.
Okay, so he gets into the car and this boy is sitting in front And this American devotee and Swami is sitting behind, or I think some arrangement like that. And as the car starts, Swami starts talking to this American devotee in flawless American accented English.
Okay.
And he is dazed. He's looking at both of them. And that devotee is absolutely casually conversing with Swami as though this is how Swami always spoke to him.
Hmm.
And Swami spoke so fluently and it was amazing. You know, he was so surprised by the way Swami spoke. And I'm sure that here and there Swami would have turned to him and given him that meaning glance. And after that drive, Swami went out, you know, for a 15-minute drive. And on their way back, Swami dropped
primary
into
school?
The primary school.
Yes, I think I'm almost 99% sure it is Hislop.
Okay, then I think it must be Hislop.
Huh.
So he says, you know, when he goes into one of the classes there, I think the first standard class, in there it is like C for cat and A for apple and all that. Swami said, what is this? And, you know, one of the kids said, Swami, C-A-T. Oh, and Swami said, C-A-T, cat-o, B-A-T, bat-o. And, you know, I think one of the kids were trying to tell Swami, Swami, it's not that, it's cat, it's mat.
Not cat-o, yeah.
And then Swami looked at, you know, this brother, Mr. Pandya, and smiled. You know, I think there was so much sweetness in that. Yes, we were lost sometimes. Yes, we forgot what he was. But, you know, we yearned for those, I often call them FAQs. When Swami would come and say, where are you from? What is your name?
Yes.
You know, which place are you from? You know that he knows everything, and that's why we are here. We are here because he knows everything. But we always yearned for those questions, didn't we?
You know, my mother tongue is Kannada, and I had this experience where on those few chances when I got to speak to Swami, first in the beginning of my student days, I would always speak in Kannada because Swami knows all languages. But Swami would always respond to me in Telugu. In fact, that is one of the reasons, that is the major reason why I picked up Telugu, because I felt that maybe, you know, he knows all languages, but
he chooses to converse in Telugu.
Only in Telugu, so I have to pick up Telugu. But then, I think this was in my first year undergraduation, or maybe in my 12th grade.
Okay.
Swami went to inaugurate a Kalyan Mandapam somewhere in Rajarajeshwari Nagar.
Right,
in Bangalore.
I remember that, yes. We were all part of that.
Yeah, so if you remember on that day, on the lawns, a huge audience had gathered.
Right.
And as Swami rose to speak, the translator went and took the podium. Swami said, no, you sit down. And then Swami apologized and said, my Kannada is not so good.
Right, I remember that.
And Swami delivered a 45-minute discourse in Kannada, and I'm saying, Prem, since my mother tongue is Kannada, it was such a joy to listen to him, and it was flawless Kannada. And he was speaking directly to the hearts of the people. So, though Karnataka and Andhra Pradesh are neighboring states, it's not as if... and also, Telugu and Kannada have almost similar script. It is so different. It is quite easy to pick up, but it is very different. Even to this day, after practicing for 10 years, I cannot speak flawless Telugu. Means when I speak Telugu, people can make out that I have learned Telugu.
You're not a native.
Yeah, I am not a native and I have learned Telugu. That they can make that out. But you could not make that out with Swami. And yes, it is as we have discussed it over and over again, it is to give us that joy that the Lord puts on the vesture.
Sometimes he really draws it away from you, even when you're having that... Oh, I remember one of my classmates, he was sitting and Swami had called a group of foreigners for an interview. And Swami, as often he does, he came out of the interview and was still having a few words with those people who were coming out. And this boy was sitting very close enough at earshot, could hear what the conversation was. He realized that Swami was speaking in a language which was not Indian.
Uh-huh.
And that lady whom he was speaking to was also speaking to him in, you know, very very fluently in some language. And then Swami turned to this boy and Swami said, did you understand what I said? So he said, no, Swami. Swami said, it's Italian.
Okay.
Swami said, it's Italian. And so this boy was, you know, I'm sure he would have had tears in his eyes, and he was so grateful that Swami had revealed and given him an opportunity to witness that. So he was so overwhelmed. He was looking at Swami with all love. And Swami looked at him and said, Yemiledra, I mean, it's nothing. They keep coming every year. I keep speaking to them. I pick up a few words here and there and I picked up the language.
That is a beauty. You know, the minute he reveals, he again quickly covers it back. And I recently received a kind of a quote, if you can say so, from a junior of mine who is residing in America. And it was very interesting. And I felt that is so apt for Swami. He said this awe that is there awe should be inspired only sometimes. Then it becomes awesome. If it's full of it always, it becomes awful. So that is what Swami, that is why Swami is awesome, you know. Because only sometimes he would do that thing to elicit awe from us. Oh my God, this is God. I remember Ramon sir, our school teacher, saying, oh God, my God, this is God. You know, that was the explanation he said that he felt. So, if we had to live in that awe all the time, so much of beautiful, that madhura, the sweetness would be lost. And therefore, only a few times here and there, to show us who he is, Swami would inspire awe. And that's why he is awesome, because he did it sometimes. And it would be awful if it was done always, because then we would lose the chance of the sweet interactions.
And that's the beauty, you know. I was listening to one of the speakers sometime back who said when he was in an interview with Swami, there was another group, and that lady who was part of that group was asking Swami, they were apparently building a new house, what color curtains to buy for their bedroom.
Okay.
And you know, this speaker said that how stupid of you. You're in the presence of divinity and you're asking such questions. But I think from Swami's point of view, to a great extent, Swami wanted us to do that. Swami said, make me a part of every small part of your life. You know, make me the center of everything that you do. It's not just every time you come in front of me, don't ask me about the Atman. You know, that's not what Swami wanted. And I think we would have been faking it if we did that all the time.
Exactly.
Swami said, yes, you have been put in a life. You are given a life. Make me a member of every event that happens in your life. I think nothing can be more spiritual than that. And I think that Swami achieved by putting on this garb of Maya every now and then, allowing us, you know, to tell him every detail, to explain every detail to him.
And that is precisely what Rama also did, because everybody got the joy of beautiful interaction with Rama. Sage Vasishtha, you know, we spoke about how he delivered the entire...
Right.
So, he got the chance to be a tutor to Rama, only because Rama chose to put on Maya. Dasharatha got a chance to be a father to Rama only because Rama put on the Maya. In the same way, Vishwamitra too got to instruct Rama because Rama chose to put on this vesture of Maya. And therefore, Vishwamitra instructed both the brothers into Bala and Atibala. And we have that clip, right, where Swami narrates.
Yeah, we listen to that small clip where Swami narrates this, how he taught them Bala and Atibala and how he himself fell into that Maya of Lord Rama.
Before we listen to that, dear listeners, just a small announcement, if we may say it so. It is with great joy and gratitude to Swami that Prem and I, we would like to announce that today happens to be the 99th episode of the Afternoon Satsang, which means on July 3rd, we will be having the 100th episode of the Afternoon Satsang. And we would like to do something little special to commemorate that occasion where we will be having the 100th satsang. And therefore, we have a little request to all you listeners out there. We would appreciate it if you could record an audio clip of say 2 to 5 minutes of what you feel about afternoon satsang. What is the thing that, what satsang was it that impacted you the most, or anything, free flow, whatever you feel, if you could record 2 to 5 minutes, some sound bites, and mail it to us.
Right. You can always mail it to listener@radiosai.org, but please do it before Sunday. That will give us enough time to collate it and organize it.
And make it part of our what really has been a memorable journey for both of us. It's with great joy in our heart that we would like to collate all these together, at the same time present a special program for all our listeners who have been instruments of Swami for us,
and
giving
been,
us
and
feedback.
And always been a part of this satsang, because
exactly.
Though you've always heard only two voices here, we have always considered all of you part of our satsang. And
we have tried to take almost all the inputs that arrive to us by mail or in any other manner and try to put it as part of the satsang, because this is a global satsang. So this is the request. So just once again, 2 to 5 minute audio clip about the afternoon satsang program, or whichever you like, whatever you wish to speak about it, which we can use as part of the 100th episode next week. Now we can listen to Swami's discourse clip about how Sage Vishwamitra fell for the Maya that Rama put on.
Ee Vishwamitrudu Dasharatha daggara వీరు సాక్షాత్ నారాయణమూర్తి, ఇతని యొక్క శక్తి సామర్థ్యం నీకు అర్థం కాదు, వీరు నీవు కుమారుల భావంతో నీవు జీవిస్తున్నావు, నీకు కుమారులు కాదు, వీరు పరమాత్మ స్వరూపులని ఇంత ధైర్యం చెప్పినటువంటి విశ్వామిత్రుడు.
విశ్వామిత్ర, హూ గేవ్ ఆల్ ద కరేజ్ టు దశరథ, టెలింగ్ డోంట్ టేక్ యువర్ సన్స్ యాజ్ ఆర్డినరీ పీపుల్, నో, దే ఆర్ వెరీ డివైన్.
సాయూ నది తీరమునకు దక్షిణ భాగములో వచ్చి చేరేటప్పటికి సాయంకాలం అయిపోయింది.
ఇట్ వాజ్ ఈవినింగ్ టైమ్ బై ది టైమ్ దే రీచ్డ్ ద బ్యాంక్స్ ఆఫ్ సరయూ రివర్.
అంతటి జ్ఞాని విశ్వామిత్రుడు తిరిగి మాయలో మునిగాడు.
విశ్వామిత్ర బీయింగ్ ద వన్ ఆఫ్ విజ్డమ్, హి ఇస్ ఆల్సో క్యారీడ్ అవే బై ఇల్యూజన్.
రామ లక్ష్మణ, ఇది కఠినమైన అరణ్యములు.
రామ లక్ష్మణ, దీస్ ఆర్ థిక్ ఫారెస్ట్,
క్రూరమైనటువంటి రాక్షసులు సంచరించేటువంటి యొక్క అడవులు.
యు ఫైండ్ ద డెమన్స్ మూవింగ్ ఆల్ అరౌండ్.
మీరు ఏనాడు కూడా ఈ రాక్షసులను మీరు చూడలేదు.
యు నెవర్ సా దెమ్ ఎర్లియర్.
మీకు ఈ భయభ్రాంతులు పోయే నిమిత్తమై మీకు ఒక మంత్రోపదేశం చేస్తాను అన్నాడు.
ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు సీ దట్ యుల్ నెవర్ బి అఫ్రైడ్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్, ఐ టీచ్ యు ఎ మంత్ర.
బల బల అనేటువంటి మంత్రోపదేశం చేశాడు.
ది టూ మంత్రాస్, ద బల అండ్ ది బల.
ఆ మంత్రోపదేశం చేసి తరువాత యోచించాడు, చీ చీ చీ, ఎంత మాయలో మునుగుతున్నాను నేను.
లేటర్ హీ థాట్, ఐఎమ్ డెల్యూడ్.
సాక్షాత్ భగవంతునికి నేను మంత్రోపదేశం చేయటమా?
ఐఎమ్ టీచింగ్ టు వెరీ గాడ్ హింసెల్ఫ్.
ఇది ఏ మాయ యొక్క ప్రభావము,
ఇస్ ది ఎఫెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ డెల్యూషన్
అని తాను చింతించుకొని తిరిగి రామలక్ష్మణులకు చెప్పలేదు.
That was that tiny clip where Swami was telling, and so beautifully Swami says that immediately after that he repents that he fell for that Maya.
And so once that, even in the Ramkatha Rasavahini, if you read, you know, Swami beautifully describes how Rama is very gracious, he smiles. Lakshmana almost laughs. He's laughing because what is this happening? Say Vishwamitra is teaching my brother Rama, who is the Supreme Lord. At the same time, though Lakshmana laughs out to himself, he also accepts the mantra and both of them receive it with great humility and obedience to the sage. And after that they move on. And as they start moving on, it's time for rest. You know, Swami described how it was the evening time when these mantras are given.
Right.
It's almost night and it's time to take rest. And they come across a very, very beautiful place at the confluence of the Sarayu and Ganga. So, this region is so beautiful, and Rama asks Vishwamitra, O revered sage, what is this land? It is so beautiful, it is so magnificent, and they see a hermitage which is very peaceful and a lovely place.
Right.
So, that is when sage Vishwamitra tells him the story of the place. He says that this is the place where the famous episode of, Manmatha Dahanam,
right,
where
my Lord Shiva,
Lord Shiva burns down Kamadeva or desire, that took place in this very region, and therefore this is a Shiva ashram, and it is a haven for all tapasvis, all people who do penance. It is abundant, it has abundant spiritual vibes. It's a beautiful place to stay, but you know, it has very strict discipline. You should be ready to adhere to that strict discipline, and then only will you be allowed. Are you ready for that? And you know, Rama and Lakshmana are so thrilled at the prospects of being in such a hallowed place. So they say, yes, yes, we will abide by everything and we will be very, very happy to stay here. And Vishwamitra smiles because he knows that naturally they are not going to say that, oh no, you know, what is the strict discipline? We can't manage this. Again, you know, forgive me, I am reminded, just before we left for Hadshi, Swami had selected a few of us, and it was such a beautiful chance. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get sleep for nights before, you know, butterflies are flying free airspace in my stomach and just waiting for the day when we can set out. And on one occasion when Swami called us, he told us, see, I'm taking you there, but you have to follow discipline strictly. You should avoid looking at the women here and there. You should not do that. You should not loiter around. You should not talk unnecessarily. You should not talk excessively. And you should have a strict discipline. Is it fine? It's okay. And naturally, yes, Swami, we will abide by everything. And then Swami said, yes, yes, don't worry. It's very comfortable to stay there. Their rooms are having air conditioning and fan as well. But don't use both of them together. Use any one. You know, it was so sweet. But I was just remembering how, when I again read Vishwamitra talking to Rama and Lakshmana, I was reminded of that. Naturally, who would not want? Yes, it is such a great privilege, and discipline is such a small price to pay, if at all it's a price to pay. And that is something we realize once we get a taste of what spirituality is and what God is. That discipline is actually a very, very small price to pay for God and for spirituality, which are great and grand treasures.
It really is. That's what we've all learnt in the hostel, and we've said it many times before. Very beautifully, Swami would say, I don't want any sadhana from you fellows. I know you're not capable of anything. He said, just follow the discipline of the hostel. And you know, that discipline of the hostel, which was meant to be, as Swami would say, it's a Gurukula. It was meant to have those disciplines. But Swami transformed that discipline as, make this as your offering to me. So that made it all the more simple. You know, you wake up in the morning, you do it for Swami. You go for Suprabhatam, you do it for Swami. Everything, whatever struggle was there, that struggle was offered to Swami. And you know, He made it so beautiful. Another point which I'd like to make here, Arvind, this is very beautiful. This, the contrast here, you know, there is this ashram of Shiva where he says that this is where Manmatha was burned down, as the story goes, that before Shiva gets wedded to Mother Parvati, it is believed that Manmatha comes and tries to inspire love in Lord Shiva, who is lost in tapas.
A little more background to this is that Sati, the Sati story takes place.
Right.
We will not go into that story, but after Sati, Shiva decides that he is not going to, you know, get into samsara as such, and therefore he becomes the ascetic. In the meanwhile, there is Tarkasura. There's a demon who starts terrorizing the earth because the annihilator Lord Shiva has gone into meditation. And that is when Brahma says that the only way is Shiva is not going to come. But Tarakasura has a boon that only a son born to Shiva can kill him.
Okay.
And this cannot happen now because Shiva has become an ascetic and renounced everything. So that is when they decide that Sati has taken birth again as Parvati. Sati was Lord Shiva's bride. So she has taken birth again as Parvati, and Parvati from her childhood, she is the daughter of King Himavan, who is supposed to be the ruler of the kingdom of the Himalayas. And that is why they say the entire Himalayas belongs to Lord Shiva, because it belongs to his father-in-law, Himavan.
Okay.
So Parvati is, from childhood, she has the only desire of marrying Lord Shiva. And so the time is ripe. It's only that Shiva has to be brought out of his penance. And that is how Kamadeva, or the Lord of Love, you know, if you see the depiction of Kamadeva, these are all very symbolic. Kamadeva is full green in color. He rides a parrot. He has got a bow made of sugarcane, and the string of the bow is made of honeybees. And he has an arrow which is studded with five flowers.
Okay.
Basically, it is spring festival. You know, spring is the season of romance, when there's romanticism in the air. So spring and romance has been concretized as a god in Sanatana Dharma, and that is Kamadeva. And so it is said that Kamadeva shoots this arrow to Lord Shiva, and momentarily Lord Shiva gets, you know, enamored by Goddess Parvati. I mean, she later becomes Goddess Parvati, by Parvati. And because of this, Lord Shiva is very upset, because for a single moment he appeared to have lost his balance. And therefore, when he just looks at Kamadeva, Kamadeva is burnt into ashes. And that is what, you know, we sing in the Lingashtakam also. Kamadahana Karuna Karalingam. Kamadahana means one who burnt Kama. But see, the next line is Karuna Karalingam. He burnt Kama, but he is so much of compassion because he resurrects Kama. You know, often people ask the question, how is it that God can get angry? In my humble opinion, I just feel that, you know, you, whatever you are able to undo, you are allowed to do. You are allowed to kill if you have the ability to grant life. So often when you have anger, the damage and consequences of anger, we have no power to correct it. So therefore we are advised not to get angry. But when it comes to a realized soul, or when it comes to God, they have the ability to, in quotes, correct what has happened. They can do either ways. So therefore it is fine. You know, there's one, I'm going to another tangent, but
I think you should go into that. But before that, even as you were saying what you said, I reminded of a wonderful quote by Rabindranath Tagore. It's just a one-liner, so you can continue after that. You know, he says, God tells him, God says that I hurt because I can heal. I punish because I love.
Wow.
That's typically, I mean, it's in a nutshell what you were just saying.
Exactly. Yeah, because now. There's this incident in, I think, Living with the Himalayan Masters by Swami Rama.
Right.
He writes of an incident where he's discoursing. He's having his own, you know, powers, and he has become a Swami. And he's discoursing and people are listening. Among the crowd, there's somebody who's very, very distracted. He seems very distracted. And Swami Rama is discoursing on the greatest secrets of life, the reason for life, and the power of life. And he just tells him that if you're not interested and you're distracted, you can please get up and leave. Stop being so fidgety. And he says, no, what you say of life doesn't make sense at all, you know. It's meaningless. Swami Rama is angry. He's infuriated, and he says, but he still maintains his composure and says, please get up and go. The person gets up, picks up a big black ant, comes to Swami Rama and just cuts it into two, and the ant dies there. He says, okay, now what do you do to this ant? Now what is the secret of life? You know the secret of life, you said. Swami Rama says, you killed an ant. Then the person takes back the two parts of the ant, puts them together, and Swami Rama writes that ant comes back to life and starts walking. And he says, you know, this is the secret of life. Okay, all that you say is nothing, and that person walks away. Swami Rama then realizes that, you know, just discoursing on the secret of life is not actually the secret of life. So he realizes that the person who appeared to be very distracted is actually the master of life. Because who else could be called about the master of secret of life than he who can give life? So in the same way, now you cannot find any fault in him cutting the ant, because anytime he wants, he can give back life to the ant. So I feel this is another thumb rule that we can follow to see whether, you know, that person is doing this, why can't I do this? If we are having the capacity and the ability to change back, undo whatever we have done, then go ahead and do, because you can change back anytime. In the sense, like, even if you feel it's a mistake, you can undo it. But if you don't have that capacity, better not do that mistake.
Very beautiful. I think it's a wonderful insight, Arvind. And if you look at this, you know, that very incident where Lord Shiva, he burns down Manmatha, and I think that's why they say that after that, when he's resurrected, he is without a form.
Yes.
He becomes the formless Lord. You know, imagine Vishwamitra is narrating this, and we spoke about Vishwamitra the last time. And Vishwamitra himself had that history where the first time he falls for the damsel Menaka, but the second time when Ramba is sent to him, he gets infuriated and curses her. You know, that's a beautiful parallel here. Hmm. Here is Vishwamitra, he's an ascetic. Shiva, who is playing the role of an ascetic. Here Vishwamitra cursed the carrier of that emotion.
Hmm.
You know, Ramba came to instigate that love. He cursed the carrier. But Lord Shiva, he actually destroyed the love itself, that kama itself.
The desire.
The desire itself. You know, that was the difference, because we often do that, you know, shoot the messenger is a mistake which we often do.
But I remember, I forget the king's name, but I remember the quote. He says that I look towards not destroying my enemies, but in destroying the enmity. So
right.
when his courtier told him that, how are you embracing your enemy? He says, he's not my enemy any longer. I have killed the enmity. I always try to kill the enmity and not the enemy.
Right. In fact, that was even what Abraham Lincoln used to say, I think.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay.
The best way to kill an enemy is to make him a friend.
Wow.
And you know, that's a very strong parallel I see there, because Shiva was saying that use your, you know, ascetic powers to destroy that desire itself. Don't try to harm those people who try to cause that desire in you.
Yes, do not harm the carrier of the desire,
right.
Destroy the desire itself, go to the root of it. In fact, as you said, Manmatha or Kamadeva is destroyed, and after that he is formless. He is subtly pervading everywhere, and they say that is what Vasanta is, a time when he comes. That is, Vasanta is spring. Spring is the time when there is love in the air, because yes, Kamadeva is in the air, he doesn't have a body anymore. And because he lost a body, you know, Anga is a limb of the body.
Right.
And when you lose all the limbs of the body, just as Kamadeva lost, it's called Ananga. So, Kamadeva is also called Ananga. And this region where he lost all his Angas is called the Anga Raja. Anga Rajya.
Right.
The kingdom of Anga. And it corresponds with current day Bihar and parts of West Bengal.
Is it? Okay.
In India. So, Vishwamitra tells this to Rama and Lakshmana that we are in the Anga kingdom, which is at the confluence of the Saraju and Ganga, and that is how they come to rest at this ashram. And when they rest in the Shiva ashram, you know, everybody is thrilled there because, you know, it's a celebrity in their midst. So all the inmates of the ashram come. The celebrity is one, Vishwamitra, because he is the ideal that many wish to attain. He is right. The hero. He is a spiritual hero for them. At the same time, the added bonus are Rama and Lakshmana, who have not yet achieved their fame, but everybody is thrilled because two princes of the kingdom have come there, and so a lot of people also come to the Shivashrama. And again, Vishwamitra discourses at length in the night before they all sleep with good thoughts, and a good practice for all of us to imbibe good thoughts before we sleep, because I have noticed most of the nights when there are bad thoughts or worried thoughts before I sleep, I don't get a good night's sleep. It's always nice to go to bed finally with thoughts of God, or good thoughts, noble thoughts, nice thoughts, so that our dreams and our experiences in the dreams, in the sleep state, are also good.
So Arvind, we'll just take a quick break there. We'll just play a small song on Lord Rama. We'll come back, dear listeners, after that. They are progressing. There is one more event which happens before they go and take shelter that night in Siddhashrama, in the ashram of Shiva, which will just make a short mention of that, but not till we are done with this song. So stay tuned. We'll get back to you after this song.
Shankara Shankara
Welcome back, dear listeners. And before we continue the story, reminding you once again, we told you that this week we are doing the 99th satsang, and we're very, very happy and glad and thankful to all of you that it's going to be the 100th satsang next week. And as Arvind mentioned before, we are looking forward to listen from you. And if you could record what you have to say about Afman Satsang, why you like it, what you like about it, what you don't like about it, what you would like to hear us discuss, in about 2 minutes to 5 minutes or 3 minutes, just a small clip of good audio quality, if you send it to us, we would like to play it on the show and for once really have all of you on the satsang.
Yeah, you can record it in your smartphone. You can. It's very easy, and then
it's
just
very easy nowadays.
Take the file down and attach it as an email and send it to listener@radiosai.org.
And please remember to send it to us before Sunday. That will give us enough time to...
Yeah, so you have just 48 hours to do it. But please participate in this, yes.
Right. Now, coming back to the story, before they go to the ashrama of Shiva and they rest for the evening, Swami says that they go to the river, you know, they come across the river, right? They come across the river Sariyu. And there they do their evening sandhya. And as we all know, the sandhya vandanam, the most important component of that is the Gayatri mantra.
Correct.
The chanting of the Gayatri mantra. And how special it is, you know, they are doing sandhya vandanam, chanting the Gayatri mantra. Swami specifically mentions that they chanted the Gayatri mantra in the presence of sage Vishwamitra. You know, he is the one who is supposed to have received that mantra and given it to the world. In fact, it is said that is why he gets that name, that appellation, Vishwamitra, friend of the entire world.
Oh, because the Gayatri mantra is so potent.
It's so potent, and he has given it to entire mankind. And they are chanting that very mantra in the presence of, you know, sage Vishwamitra.
Wow, that's lovely. And so it is after that that they come and rest in Shivashrama. And from then on, the next day morning, they get up, they wake up, they have their ablutions in the river Ganga. They cross the Ganga and then enter the thick forests in that region. And that is when Vishwamitra tells them the story of those thick forests. Apparently, there were two flourishing kingdoms called Malada and Karosha. And they were flourishing with people, and they were complete, you know, well-planned cities, and they have been ruined and they have come to this state.
Mm-hmm.
That is when Rama asks, why is it, O sage, what happened? And that is when Vishwamitra tells them about Tataki and her son Maricha,
right? And he says about that story where there is this king who is ruling in that area, you know, who was supposed to have earned a boon from Brahma. His name is Suketu.
Yes, actually Suketu is a yaksha. What happens is, when Vishwamitra says that Tataki is a yaksha's daughter and her son is Maricha, who is also a yaksha. Yaksha is again like a semi-rakshasa, a semi-demon and semi-god or something like that.
Okay.
So it's in between. That is when Rama asks, saying that, but yakshas are not so powerful. How is it that Tataki is able to do this? And that is when Vishwamitra goes into the story of Tataki, says that Suketu was a yaksha who was very, very noble and pious. And he prayed to Brahma, and Brahma blessed him with the boon that he will get a very, very, very powerful offspring. Powerful,
right,
and strong and, you know, every way perfect offspring. He gets a daughter, but she is very beautiful and she has tremendous strength. And that is why he looks towards finding a perfect match for her and marries her to Sunda. Sunda is a demon actually, but he is very, very powerful. So a powerful demon marries a powerful Yakshi, and the offspring is Maricha. Maricha will come later in our Ramayana story also, and so therefore it's important that we remember this. So Sunda and Tataki give birth to Maricha, and then they, because they think no end of themselves, vanity and pride, they come so easily when you have ego, that is body attachment, they think that they are supreme, and they start causing problems in that region.
But I think before that, the story of Malada and Karosha itself is something which we have, skipped.
Okay.
Because it starts with by saying that, you know, that's what Lord Rama is asking Vishwamitra. He says, this place looks like it was a very flourishing kingdom once upon a time.
Correct.
You know, how did it become like this? So how did it become like that? The answer was Tataki and Maricha. But how did it, in the first place, be a flourishing kingdom?
Yes. So dear listeners, you know what happened? These are called Upakathas. They are small, small sub-stories, but these are the sub-stories that give actual meaning and give us a detailed background and history and help us in our understanding of the main story. So the story goes that, again, you know, these Upakathas will have further branchings, and just as I'm thinking of it itself, I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to take you deep. But it will be terrific, let me assure you, that there was this Rakshasa called Vritra.
Okay.
Vritra, who was born as a formidable foe to Indra.
Mm-hmm.
And the story goes that Indra, in order to defeat Vritra, needed to have a very special and potent weapon. And the weapon had to be made from a person who has been selfless all his life and who has got great power because of penance. And sage Dadichi is one such. And he therefore gives up his body because he has no body attachment. And his bones are used to make a mace for Lord Indra, with which he kills Vritra. Now, though Vritra is a Rakshasa, he is a Brahmachari and a Brahmin, a person who is engaged in the pursuit of Brahman, mm-hmm. because of which Indra incurs a curse.
Okay.
Curse of killing a person who is engaged in penance to find out the nature of Brahman. That is Brahmachari, that is what is Brahmin. So because of that, he gets the mala. Mala means stain.
Stain
right. of killing a Brahmin.
Sin of killing the Brahmin.
And Karosha means the cry, the painful cry. He's in agony.
Yeah, what happens is he's, because of that sin, he's struck by unsatiable hunger. And he's just not, you know, how much ever they feed him, he's not able to conquer that hunger. And, you know, you can imagine that if you're constantly every moment in that pangs of hunger.
You wail like a baby.
Right. That is how the sin takes form in his body.
And it's in this region that the sages
take him and dip him in the Ganga
and cleanse him of the sins and give him relief. And therefore, Indra becomes happy and returns to his abode. And therefore, since this is the place where his mala, or the stain, or the sin of killing was washed off, a kingdom Malada comes. And since the Krosha, his cry has been stopped here and he has been healed of the crying, from the word Krosha comes the kingdom Karosha. But you know, Prem, I want to take you back to the story of the battle between Indra and Vritra, because there is one very important point which I feel is relevant here, and I had heard this from our school teacher Praveena sir.
Mm-hmm.
He was narrating this when he was teaching us Vedas.
Okay.
He was telling us that Vedas have a pronunciation, they also have intonation.
Mm-hmm.
And you should pronounce them properly, because if wrongly pronounced, the Sanskrit words can mean something else. So that we know that pronunciation is so important, not only in Sanskrit, in any other language.
Right.
But the Vedas have another thing called intonation. You know, when we chant Ganana Amtva Ganapati Gum Hava Mahem, so there are some that come high, that come mid, that come low,
right.
and that come double high. These are the four kinds of intonations that are there. Now I'm not remembering the exact details, but he said that there is a story behind how this Vritra was born. In fact, there was a tapas, yagna that was being conducted in order to give birth to a being who will protect and take care of Indra.
Mm-hmm.
So, Again, I'm not sure if it's exactly Vritra, but let us say they wanted to give rise to a being who will protect Indra.
Okay.
And so therefore, the chant, the words go as Indra Shatru Vardhaswa. And again, I'm not sure of the intonations. I don't want to chant the wrong intonations here. But if chanted correctly, it would mean that this yagna is an offering in order to give rise to a being who will kill Indra's Shatru.
Shatru. That enemies who, of Indra.
Who will kill destroy the enemies of Indra and keep Indra
and protect
safe.
Indra, right.
But the intonation of the chant became wrong, because of which it meant that let this give birth to an enemy of Indra who will destroy him.
Okay.
Rather than a being who will destroy the enemies of Indra, it will give birth to an enemy of Indra who will destroy him.
And it's just because of one intonation in that.
Intonation going wrong. Not even the word. A word has been pronounced correctly. But the intonation going wrong. And this was an example that we would be given during the first class of our Veda chanting. And you know, they would tell that is the reason why you have to chant it properly. And there used to be many jokes, you know. They would say that chanting one wrong intonation is equal to incurring the sin of killing 100 cows or 1,000 cows, I don't know. And we would often joke that, you know, the way we are chanting, the Gokulam will get wiped out.
There was a very long-standing joke in the Vedam group where you say, you know, CPMs, that's how they used to say, cows per minute.
Cows per minute, the number of...
to say how badly a person is chanting Veda, you know, his CPM is this much. His CPM
high
is
CPM
much.
Means your chanting is horrible. So, and you know, that is why our ever-loving Swami has given us the Yadakshara Padabhrashtam mantra.
Right.
Which is a Kshama Prarthana, seeking forgiving for, you know, forgiveness for Visarga Bindu Matrani. If you have made errors in the Visarga, which are the two dots, Matras or Bindu, that is the, these are the different pronunciations. And the later on the intonations also. But you know the sad thing, Prem, that many times the Kshama Prarthana itself we chant wrong.
You know, and that's the beauty, because one thing which Swami is often told is, you know, that's the speciality of the Kali Yuga. You know, when you talk of a yajna, when you talk of a ritualistic practice, there were so many of these little details which had to be done correctly. You know, the dimension of that yajna kunda should be perfect. The kind of things which went into the fire, the way the fire was made, there were so many little details, and every one of that had to be done perfectly. You know, when we come to the part where we say Vishwamitra did the yajna to protect which Rama and Lakshmana have come, you know, we will talk about how much detail Swami goes into how it was done. But the fact was, Swami says that in Kali Yuga, that intention being pure can take care of everything else.
That's a great blessing of Kali Yuga.
Great blessing.
Which we often curse as the baddest of times.
Right. And that's why Swami says that, yes, I know you are not capable of being so perfect in all these things, but do it with the right intention. Do it with the intention of offering it to God, and do it selflessly, and that will take care of all the mistakes which you do. Of course, that doesn't, you know, give you the license to go around doing all the mistakes.
Correct. You know, that's what, if you're going about with the thinking that you have the license to do mistake, again your intention goes wrong. So keep a pure intention and do your best to win the bonus points also of getting the intonation and chanting right. Because we often chant Veda. Vedas are so powerful. So we also have our Vedam tutor that will come up very soon again.
Right, in the evening.
And we are also planning to have these Vedam tutor as CDs, you know, Prem. In the Sai Blossom store, we will try to make them available by Guru Purnima, because we thought that will be a beautiful offering to the Guru, where you can learn the Vedas. Okay, coming back to this. So, it becomes so... Yes, so we were talking about Malada and Karosha. So, these kingdoms have now been brought to ruin, because when... The trio of Sunda, Tataki and Maricha start destroying everything. Sage Agastya gets upset because they are damaging the kingdom, they are destroying the society, they are destroying nature. He curses Sunda to death. Now Sunda dies. And when the demon Sunda dies, Tataki is enraged like no end. And she and Maricha start wreaking even greater havoc in the regions. And now, Sage Agastya curses Tataki into ugliness.
You know, that's a very beautiful point. Because before that, Agastya, as you said, Agastya kills Sunda, who comes and tries to trouble him. But he doesn't kill Tataki. He says that Tataki's woman and a Brahmin should not incur the sin of killing a woman. Yes. So he disfigures her and, you know, converts her into an ogress.
Hmm. He puts, yeah, there are dual curse. One is he curses her to be ugly, disfigures her. Then he curses her to be an ogress. And yet it doesn't start. You know, when she becomes an ogress, she becomes ugly. And things also turn ugly because she starts doing even more damage. Finally, Agastya just moves away from there. And the whole region gets devastated. And now it is time for Rama to kill Tataki and Maricha and redeem the region. That is when Rama gets a very important doubt. And what is that doubt? I think we will take it up in the next Ram Katha Rasa Vahini Satsang, because it is something beautiful. Well, actually we can state the doubt, I think. Rama gets the same doubt. He says to Vishwamitra that when Agastya refrained from killing Tataki because she is a woman, how do you expect me to kill a woman now? Is this not unfair that I kill a woman? And the explanation that Vishwamitra gives is wonderful, no doubt, but it is no match to the explanation that Swami gives in Ram Katha Rasa Vahini and in his discourses. So we will go to that during our next fortnight of Ram Katha Rasa Vahini, dear listeners, because our next week satsang is going to be our 100th satsang. What is it? Is it the golden jubilee or is it the platinum?
I think it's...
golden is 50 golden and is 50, platinum is 75. So don't know, we'll
diamond jubilee, right.
Yes. The diamond jubilee of afternoon satsang. So dear listeners, once again, on behalf of Prem and myself, making this request that we would like from you sound bites, 2 to 5 minutes. You can record it on your cell phone, you can record it in any other mic, a mic which is attached to your PC, and just mail this audio file of 2 to 5 minutes to listener@radiosai.org. These are just your thoughts and feelings about afternoon satsang and the journey so far. And as you do that, Prem and myself here, we promise you that we will also sit and look at our journey so far and try to make this 100th episode program, which we will present to you next week. Please do send in your opinions, your thoughts and your feelings by Sunday night according to Indian Standard Time, so that Monday onwards Prem and myself can sit on this and prepare for this.
So dear listeners, it is with much gratitude that we are making this request, because definitely, you know, we have benefited so much by bringing you this afternoon satsang, and we would love the world to know how grateful we are to all of you, and that's what the next week is about to be. And we would be very, very glad if you all could join in and thank Swami, as all of us, you know, as members of the satsang can thank Swami for what we've been through. So we leave you with a song now. We're concluding the Ram Katha Rasa Vahini for this fortnight. Be back again. We promised to kill Tataki this week. We couldn't. We'll probably do it the next time we meet with the Ram Katha satsang. So for now, we'll leave you with this beautiful song on Lord Rama. On the other side of the song, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his program Love to Love.
Madhuram, Madhuram, Dilyavaram, పరమ పావనం నీ గుణగానం రామ రామ శ్రీరామ రామ రామ రఘురామ రామ రామ శ్రీరామ సాయి రామ రఘురామ పులకించి ముందు నిలిచెరా ముని సతి రూపై పాదధూళికే శిలపులకించి ముందు నిలిచెరా ముని సతి రూపై ఎదురు చూసిన శబరి జన్మము ఎదురు చూసిన శబరి జన్మము ధన్యమాయేరా అతిథి వినీవై రామ రామ శ్రీరామ రామ రామ రఘురామ రామ రామ శ్రీరామ సాయి రామ రఘురామ రాణి కరకు గోయకు కావ్యము రాసే కవితను సహితివి భాషే రాణి కరకు గోయకు కావ్యము రాసే కవితను సహితివి నామనంబున నిలిచి ఉండవా నామనంబున నిలిచి ఉండవా నా జన్మము తెలియింపజేయవా రామ రామ శ్రీరామ రామ రామ రఘురామ రామ రామ శ్రీరామ రామ రామ రఘురామ రామ రామ శ్రీరామ ఈ నామమేనాతారక మంత్రం రామ రామ శ్రీరామ మేనాతారకమంత్రం మధురం మధురం దివ్యవరం మధురం మధురం దివ్యవరం పరమ పావనం నీ గుణగానం రామ రామ శ్రీరామ రామ రామ రఘురామ